Nehemiah. Guess what the word Nehemiah means. Does anybody know? Emily, what does it mean? Doesn't mean dance. You're wrong. It doesn't mean dance. Zach, it doesn't mean guitar.
I didn't say.
No. What does Nehemiah mean? Does anybody know? No, it means comfort. It means the Lord comforts. Have you ever heard of the word Nahum? Have you ever heard of the prophet Nahum? That word means comfort. Have you ever heard of the place that Jesus hung out in called Capernaum? No? Has anybody heard that? Capernaum? No? It has Capernaum. The prophet, the small prophet Nahum is in it. So the Capernaum means town of comfort. So they're kind of all similar related words, Nehemiah. Nehemiah is written probably 15 years after the ending of the book of Ezra. Do you guys know kind of where we're at as far as like if we had a calendar? I wish we had our projector up. We would just show you guys, but it blew up today. I mean, we were sitting right there, me and Nate and someone, and there was this loud clap. It was like, but it was louder. It was like three times as loud. And we're like, oh, like, what was that? That was weird. And it was like, we think it's the light bulb that blew in that thing this morning. So it's like all of a sudden we started smelling a little bit of something burning. We're like, uh-oh. So as long as it's not the computer. Have you guys ever put in, by the way, I hate to go on this, but have you ever put in wrong RAM into a computer before? Or have you ever put in a hard drive and put the wires in wrong and turned on your computer and it literally is singeing the wires? You turn it on and it's burning so hot, all the wires are singeing in your computer. Yeah, I've done that and blown up computers. But sorry, on a side note. But this is written about 15 years after the time of Ezra. It's probably 150 years after the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians. So we're kind of teaching through these books that, like, we went through Kings, then we went through Ezra, and sometimes we think these things can happen chronologically, really back to back, like all of a sudden this happened, and then next this happened, and then next that happened, and that's not how it is. It's like there's a lot of time in between things, you know? So I want you to think more like, hey, a lot of times happen from the destruction of Jerusalem and the end of Kings, and all of a sudden Babylon comes into Jerusalem and takes out the temple and the city and takes them all into captivity. You know, now there's about 50,000 Jews that have gone back to Jerusalem. And they've gone back with Ezra to restore the temple. And now in Nehemiah, they're going back to restore the actual city of Jerusalem and build its walls. And, you know, some of the themes I think of when I think of Nahum is kind of having a heart to do something for God. You know, kind of like when you're in love with God and when you're in love with someone, like say, you know, when I was young and I was, younger, and I was hanging out with Sylvia, you know, and it's like she was so fine and so fun and so freaky cool that all I could do was want to do something cool, you know, with her, you know. And it wasn't something that was like hard for me to do. It wasn't something that, like, you know, it was something that naturally just came about because of my love for her, my enjoyment of her. And that's how a relationship with God should be in our service to God. It's not like service to God should be something that just naturally comes out of a person's life. It's just because you love God so much that you naturally want to serve him. It would suck, you know, if someone said to me, hey, dude, you have to serve God in this way. You know, you got to wear a white robe. And the white robe represents holiness. So, man, we want you to wear that. And I'm like, okay, so I'll put on the white robe. So I put on the white robe. And then I want you to hold this staff of power, you know, because the staff of power represents Moses. And that's, you know, God really likes that stuff, you know. So I put on the staff. And then they go, yeah, we want you to go, you know, stand over here and serve God, you know, by, you know, being a door monitor or something. And you know, it would be like a forced thing. I wouldn't really like to do any of those things. But there are people, man. There are people that, man, wear white, have a staff, and they hang out by the door and they're ushers or things like that. And they love it. They love dressing up. They love wearing, doing weird stuff. But it's because they love Jesus. It's like, you know what I mean? They just have a special call. And when you love Jesus, things just naturally happen where you do things naturally that to serve God. And Nehemiah has a natural love for God, I see. The other theme in the book is that the very end, and we won't get, this group won't get through it. The second service will get through the end of the book. But there's some wonderful quotes, and it just says, God is compassionate. He's slow to anger. He's rich in love. God is gracious. And that's another theme of the book, is that, you know, God is very compassionate. Though his people were like whores and went and practiced whoredom spiritually, right? They went and served other gods. They were prostitutes. Though God will come to their rescue and will help them out of the bondage that they're in. And that's a very comforting word. I mean, can you imagine being 150 years, like if Tucson got taken by another country, and then 150 years we were living in Mexico? You know, our first of all, we would die, but the next generation would be like, man, we want to get back to our homeland. Well, these people, that's how desperate they are. They want to be back to their homeland, and they're begging God that God would have mercy on them and have them go back. So it's kind of that's the heart, too, that's there. So let's get into it a little bit. It says, the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. Can you guys say that? You got to bring it up. Yeah, let me pass the bucket around. No. It came to pass in the month of, how do you pronounce that? Kislev. That's a good word. Okay, this is around our November, December, so it's cold. It must be a little chilly out there in the desert. In the 20th year, I was in Shushan, the citadel. Now, Shushan, the citadel, was the kind of the king's palace of the Persian, Medo-Persian Empire. And it says that Hanani, one of my brethren, came with men from Judah, so they came from Israel, and I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, the survivors who are left from the captivity in the province are there in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down, and its gates are burned with fire. The word reproach just means insult, meaning there's people in Jerusalem, but they're being insulted and persecuted and things like that. They're not being treated well. And it also says that the wall of Jerusalem is broken down. Now, if you have a wall of a city that's broken down, what does that mean? What does that mean, Bethany? The walls of the city are broken down. It's down. So what does that mean? It means it's down. That's true. Did you catch that? If the wall is down, Uriah, that means the wall is down. Right? Okay. We are really moving quick in this group. But what do you think that means, though? If the walls are down, I mean, what does that imply? Zach? Okay, dude. Okay, did we all do marijuana before we came to church today? Is your parents making you guys some weird brownies or what?
I think they are.
You guys are like, oh, well, Bo, man, let me tell you, the wall's down, and that means that the... What, Caitlin? Okay, that their defenses are down. Don't you guys ever play, like, games, man? Aren't you guys any, like, ding, 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 ding? Like, I know Bo James, dude. I'm going to his room. He's got, like, five monitors, and he's like, oh, ju, 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 ju. Hey, Japan. Hey, China. Ju, ju, ju. And he's got all of his things, dude. He's got, like, tubes going through his computers with water blowing through it. And we got a funnel running from the outside window with all the air to get into his computer to cool it down because he's bringing the government computers all... They're flickering on and off as he's playing his games with the world, you know? And it's like, you look at it, you look at the game, and you're like, dude, and they got defenses, and they got all these fortresses going on, and then he clicks a button, and now it's blown up, and now he's fighting something, and I'm just like, dude, this is crazy. Yeah, it means that if you don't have a city with walls, that means what? You can just go in and conquer, right? You know, think about it this way. If your life, if you don't have walls, if you don't have boundaries in your own life, if you don't have any boundaries in your own life, right? Women, if you don't have any boundaries, what's going to happen to you? You're going to get conquered. Right? If you don't have any boundaries, you're vulnerable to someone conquering. Right? That's how it works. So it's like a city has to have strong walls, and we as people, too, need to have boundaries, too. That's one of the greatest lessons to learn when you're young, is that there's a word, and it's really short, and it's only two letters. No. 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 Because guys like me prey on weak people, especially weak girls. And guys like me growing up, we would find those weak girls and find the ones that couldn't say no. Wouldn't. Not that they didn't want to say no. I knew they didn't want to say yes. But I knew they couldn't say no. Because whatever reason, peer pressure, fear, fear of not being liked, that peer pressure thing kind of thing. Wanting to be loved, wanting to think that someone really cares for them. And I would play whatever role they needed in their life. There's guys like me out there. They're sick. I know. I'm one of them. Boundaries. Say no. Say no, girls. Guys, say no too. You know? The city had no walls. It was vulnerable. And so it was, when I heard these words, that I sat down and I wept. He cried. He was bummed. Nehemiah had a heart for his homeland. And he mourned many days, and with fasting and praying before the God of heaven. How many of you guys have fasted? How many of you guys really have fasted? Be honest. Be honest. Come on. Okay, a few of you, right? Do you guys know what fasting is? How many of you guys know what fasting is? Okay, so some of you guys know. Yeah, it doesn't sound really that fun, does it? When you think about it, you're like fasting, you know. Personally, myself, I like what's called natural fasting. And what I mean by that is I like when I'm like busy in a day and I just go, hey, you know what? I'm going to dedicate this lunch or whatever it is to just praying or seeking God and just thinking about God and just wanting to hear from God, that kind of thing. I'm not one of those guys who puts it on the calendar like, you know, Tuesdays and Thursdays, I'm going to fast at lunch. Because I tend to like look at that calendar and I'm like, I don't know. You know what I mean? It's like I don't like that, you know? So, but fasting is just a discipline. It's a wonderful discipline. I'm not going to talk about it too much, but it's getting rid of maybe all food or all music or anything in your life. It could be in your guys' world, like technology. It could be a fast of technology just to seek God, things like that. But it's a religious dedication, if you will, to God. Very cool. There's definitely a lot to say about it, but I'm not going to right now. And it says in verse 5, and I said, I pray, Lord God of heaven, O great and awesome God, you who keep the covenant of mercy to those who love you and observe your commandments, please let your ear be attentive and your eyes open that you may hear the prayer of your servant, which I pray before you now, day and night, for the children of Israel, for your servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which have sinned against you, both my father's house and I have sinned. How long did he pray? How long was he praying? What does it say? Day and night. So he prayed all the time. That's pretty cool. The New Testament says this in Thessalonians. It says, pray without ceasing, right? Pray all the time. Nehemiah's heart, you know, if you love God, it's natural to want to pray. Praying isn't something that you have to do. It's something you get to do. And it comes out of just a simple love for God. You can pray when you're playing volleyball, Nate. Like before the ball comes, you could say, hey, Jesus, I love you, man. You're awesome. And the ball comes. You know what I mean? Yeah, hopefully not in the face. But, you know, you can pray in any set of circumstances. Sometimes, some of you guys, you know, you just don't realize that. Sometimes when you're playing your video games or you're drawing or you're reading, you can pray through all these things. And that way you guys can be praying all night and all day too. I mean, you always want to have communication with God going on all the time. A lot of times I'll just talk to people and I'll just say, hey, is the communication with God going? Are you communicating with God right now? You know, and I hope to hear like, yeah, a lot of times students will say, I don't know, You know, like, not really. Even if you sin, it's good to communicate with God. Like, right when you sin, man, it's good to talk to God and say, God, you see my what I'm doing, and it's wrong. But it's so important to keep the line of communication open with God, to always be talking to Him. And Nehemiah's got that kind of heart. It's cool. And it says, we have acted very corruptly, so he confesses their sins against you. We have not kept the commandments, the statutes, nor heeded the ordinances which you commanded your servants Moses. Man, I haven't heard, we haven't listened to any of your word, he says. Man, we haven't obeyed any of it. And then in verse 8 he says, remember, I pray, the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though some of you were cast out to the farthest part of heaven, yet I will gather them from there and bring them to the place which I have chosen as a dwelling for my name. So there's a prophetic word right there, right? Meaning though they are scattered to all the nations, God will bring them back. And then in verse 10 it says, now these are your servants for your people, to whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. O Lord, I pray these, please let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and the prayer of your servants who desire to fear your name, and let your servants prosper this day, I pray, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer. Okay, we finally learned that Nehemiah was the king's cupbearer. I'll tell you a little bit about that. But the other thing I want you to see in verse 11 is this. It says, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant. It says, who desire to fear your name. And I kind of like that. That Nehemiah, in his prayer, he says, hey man, we have a desire to fear your name. I don't fear it too much. You know, and sometimes that's just an honest confession of Bo. Sometimes Bo just doesn't fear God enough. You know, it's amazing. Like when have you ever like gone to the doctor and they said something to you and you kind of got real sketched out? Like, oh my God, like maybe something's wrong. I don't know if any of you have ever had anything like that, but it's kind of a weird feeling. Like, you know, and you kind of get this idea like, dude, I'm going to die. And that becomes like one of the first thoughts in your brain. You know, like, what happens if I die? And when you think about death, like when your doctor says something to you and you kind of think like, man, dude, I could die or something like that, you start going through a little bit of a list. You know, you start going through like, dude, where am I at in life? And man, what's going on in my life? And I'm going to go meet my maker, you know, and where am I at? And you start going through that. And sometimes I wish every day I had that doctor tell me, hey, dude, you're going to die today. Hey, dude, you're going to die today. Because it seems like if I really felt like I was going to die every day, dude, I would have a fear of God. I think every day I'd be like, man, dude, I'm going to go visit God today. You know what I mean? So it's like, in a sense, I need to kind of have that mentality all the time. Like, man, I could go see God today. Really. So I want to have that reverence for Him. You know, that, man, awe, fear, you know. And you guys have heard us talk about fear, so I'm not going to get into all that either. Nehemiah was the cupbearer for the king of the Medo-Persian Empire. Isn't that cool? God had Nehemiah become one of the main food and drink tasters for the king. How would you like that job? That's right. You know why he was the cupbearer? It was to prevent the king from dying in case he was going to get poisoned. You know what I mean? So it's like he would drink the wine. He would eat the meat. And he would go, hey, that's good stuff. Did I die? No. You know, and it's good. And he knew everything about the king. He knew about his personality, his tastes, what he liked. And he was like, you know, he was like those chef people. You know what I mean? Like you watch on TV and they know everything about tasting food. And they're like, cook with this. Yeah, and you're like, what? And it's some funky. Like, I love it when they say, like, octopus. And everybody's like, oh. Like, oh my God. And then they go, okay. And then they go to work. You know what I mean? But the cupbearer knew all about everything like that. He was like a pro food guy. So it's like, it must have been a killer job. I mean, even though there's a risk, the risk is that someone could be preparing something for the king who's infiltrating. you know. But on the whole, I'm sure it's all pretty good. You know what I mean? You get to taste the greatest wine, dude. I'm sure he was the best wine taster. He's like, man, that is 1000 BC wine. That's pretty good. You know what I mean? He tasted the other one. He's like, whoa, dude, that's like 1500. That's like Abraham wine. You know what I mean? I mean, he was the best wine taster probably ever. I mean, could you imagine? That was like off the charts. You know, so he was doing all this stuff on TV. Nothing new under the sun, right? All this stuff's been around forever. So he's the cupbearer. And you know what I like about the idea, too, of a cupbearer? And it's just kind of a side note that's in my brain. But it's like, I think, like, you know, he, in a sense, he was going to bear the wrath. You know, like, if there was poison in it, he would bear the wrath for the king. You know what I mean? And I see a real picture of Jesus there. You know, Jesus bore our wrath, you know, for the Father. You know, he was our cupbearer, you know, which is kind of cool. He's the one who drunk, you know, the sin, all the sin that we have was put on him, and he drank that. He drank all of Bo's perversion, all of it. He drank that, and he took it, man. He took it to on himself, and he partook of it. And it says, he who knew no sin in the New Testament, it says, became sin. So Jesus, who didn't know Bo sin at all, became Bo sin and died for the wrath. So he became the greatest cupbearer in a sense, man. He bore my sin and my shame. He protected me from the wrath that was coming to Bo, you know, by tasting my sin and dying for my sin on that cross, man. That's why we love Jesus, right? I mean, because, man, he did what Bo couldn't do. He did what none of us could do. See, I'm a sinner. I need Jesus, you know. And he came and willingly bore my sin. So Nehemiah is like that to me. It's kind of cool. And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year, Nisan, if I remember, is the first month on the Jewish calendar. I think it's around March to us. In the 20th year of King Artaxerxes. How many of you guys have heard King Artaxerxes? Wasn't he in like a movie? Like 300? Yeah, wasn't he in 300? Did you see that? All the jewelry, isn't that cool? Yeah, that was a good depiction. I remember that. King Artaxerxes. No, you guys didn't see that? Okay, good. We don't want you to see it. Okay. It says, when wine was before him, that I took the wine and gave it to the king, and now I had never been sad in his presence before. So Nehemiah was an optimist, man. He was a happy dude. You know what I mean? He was just so cool to be around. He was probably like, hey, king. He was happy, but he was sad. And the king took notice of that. It says, and why is your face sad, since you are not sick? There is nothing but sorrow in your heart. So I became dreadfully afraid. Now, Nehemiah becomes afraid, because if you get sad in front of the king could get kind of sad too. And the king don't like people around him that are downers. You know what I mean? And if you get too down around people of prominence, they might want to take you out. They're like, you know what? I'm just sick of your depression. Can you please leave me alone? But kings took care of that with killing you. You know what I mean? That's how the king took care of you. Yeah, if you were an old school king, like if I was a king, dude, I just want happy people around me. I'd have that happy song playing all day long. I'd be like, no, 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 no. You know, just a happy tune going, dude. I'd just be like, oh, I'm happy, dude, happy. I want a happy pill, man. Everybody wants happy pills. You know what I mean? No, I don't sell happy pills. $20, dude, after church. Okay? I'll get you the happy pill. That's funny. Have you guys ever taken a bottle of vitamin C and popped a bunch of it? No. I double dog dare you. What happens? Oh, dude, you will have the run so bad. The next day, dude, you will be down.
Do we got this teaching recorded?
Yeah. Okay. Next thing. I just thought of vitamins real quick. You know what I mean? Anyway, I haven't been with you guys in a while, so I'm a little giddy. It's fun to be with you guys. I hope you guys missed me as much as I've missed you, Caitlin. Okay, Now it's now okay. After the king wants the happy man, and he's not happy, so he asks why, right? And Nehemiah cries out and says, "Why should my face in verse 3 not be sad when the city of the place of my father's tombs lies in waste and its gates are burned with fire, man?" So what I love about Nehemiah is he's a cool leader in a sense for the Jews because he's being honest to the king. He doesn't lie to him. He's actually being honest. And you want your leaders to be honest. If they're bummed out, you want them to tell you why. If they're happy, you want them to tell you why. You know, I used to have a friend, and he moved away to California. But every time I asked him something, every day, if I said, "Hey, dude, how you doing?" He's like, "Oh, man, things are great." The next day, "Hey, dude, how you doing?" "Things are great." Next day, "How you doing?" "Man, things are great." And it's like every day he said the same thing with the same inflection and everything. And it was kind of like, okay, you know, things are great, you know. And then I'd be a little scared to ask him. And then I found out he was getting divorced. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I don't think things were so great. You know what I mean? Maybe things weren't so great. And the dude just like was lying. You know, and sometimes we're like that, right? "Hey, how you doing? Man, things are good." You know, right? Everything's great. Right? When it's not really good, you know. And Nehemiah wasn't cut out of that cloth. He was cut out of the one where he's just like brute honesty, king. "Man, dude, my people are going through struggles, and I'm going through struggles." And that's how it should be with friends. You know, if you truly have friends in your life, man, when they're bummed out, you're bummed out. You know? When a friend dies, part of you dies. Gosh, I remember 4 years ago, I don't know if you guys remember, some of you won't, but Sean Green died. I had a friend who overdosed. He had a lot of back pain, and sometimes when you have a lot of back pain, and you've had surgeries and stuff like that, you just start popping your pills. But he was a drinker too, so he was drinking whiskey and taking his pills. And he ended up overdosing. And I got word of it. And I remember just sitting in here during a service when I got the word, and I just sat in front of you guys and just cried. I was just like, oh, you know. And it was just, man, it just bummed me out. I haven't seen Sean in a while, but I went back and cleaned out his apartment with his brother and things like that. You know, you should be bummed. I mean, you know, when something happens to your friends, you know, there should be some kind of impact. So Nehemiah was like that. And then in verse 4 it says, "Then the king said to me, 'What do you request?' So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, 'If it pleases the king and if your servant has found favor in your sight, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may build it.' Then the king said to me, 'The queen also sitting behind him, how long will your journey be, and when will you return?' So it pleased the king to send me, and I sent him a time. Furthermore, I said to the king, 'If it pleases the king, let letters be given to me for the governors, for the regions beyond the river, that they may give me a permit to pass through till I come to Judah.'" And so he asked the king to send letters to the governors of these areas and that he is going to be able to build, start the work on the project. But notice what happens. In verse 17, all right, let's go to verse 15. It says, "First he went up at night by the valley and viewed the wall. Then I turned back and entered by the valley gate, so I returned, and the officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done. And I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the others who did the work. Then I said to them, 'You see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lies waste, and its gates are burned with fire. Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer be a reproach.' And I told them on the hand of the hand of my God, which has been good upon me, and also of the king's words that he had spoken to me. So they said, 'Let us rise up and build.' So they set their hands to do good work." Now notice what happens. "But when Shambal the Horonite," that's a cool name, "Tobiah the Amorite official, Geshem the Arab heard of it, they laughed at us and despised us and said, 'What is this thing that you are going to do? Will you rebel against the king?' So I answered and said to him, 'Then the God of heaven himself will prosper us. Therefore, We, his servants, will arise and build, but you have no heritage or right or memorial in Jerusalem. So Nehemiah goes to Jerusalem. He goes to build. You know, he wants to do this wonderful work for God. He prays, when you want to do a work for God, the first thing you probably should do is be praying, asking God to do a work in you. He goes there, but then what happens is that there's conflict, right? And usually that's how it always is. If you want to serve God, there's always going to be some kind of conflict. Now, what are the main conflicts when you go to serve God? What is in conflict with you? What does the Bible say that is your enemies? Okay, your flesh, right? So one of the things we battle is our flesh, right? The Bible teaches us that our flesh is by nature its default button. If we think of it as like a computer, our default is sin. That is the default of human beings. I can't not do it, okay? The only way I can not do it is actually if I'm born again. I have to be made new by the Holy Spirit who comes into my life and gives me a power to overcome this default that I'm in, the flesh. So whenever I want to serve God, there's always the flesh that is fighting that all the time. Usually when you really go, man, dude, I really want to serve you, Lord. I'm gonna really go serve you. Usually your flesh will struggle the most. If you struggle with food, you'll probably struggle with food the most then. If you struggle with pornography, you'll probably struggle with pornography the most then. Right when you try to get your act together, that's when your flesh will creep up and say, uh-uh, no way, bro. You ain't going that direction of serving God. And it'll fight. And you have to learn in the Spirit through reading the Word, studying, praying, seeking God with all your heart. And when you do that, there's going to be pain because you have to actually crucify this flesh. And you do it by starvation. You starve it. You got to starve this dude to death. And that means you have to deny it what it wants. Right? For me, I had to deny Sylvia. And I had to move. For me, that was moving. But that's how I denied my flesh. I starved my flesh, right? So that's one area, it's the flesh. Okay, what's another area that when we go to serve God, we struggle with the things of the flesh? What is another thing that the Bible teaches? Not only the flesh, but what else? What else is there that is against you? So not just yourself. What else would be against you from a biblical perspective? Satan. Shatan. Yeah, it is. It's a hockey player. Played for Buffalo Sabres. His last name was S-A-T-A-N. Shatan. That's how they pronounced it. I'm like, that's good. I went to the baseball game for the Diamondbacks, the home opener, the other day. I took my old man. He's a big Giants fan. It was Diamondbacks versus Giants. And, dude, a guy went up to bat for Giants, dude. And you know what his name was? It was so cool. Angel Pagan. Isn't that crazy? A-N-G-E-L, last name, P-A-G-A-N. I'm like, Angel Pagan? I'm like, really? That's that dude's name? And you know how they pronounced it? Pagan. Angel Pagan. I'm like, oh. Dude, that's pagan, bro. That ain't no pagan. That ain't no pagan. You know, no, Satan. Okay, so another thing is the Bible teaches that there actually is a Satan. There actually is a created fallen being, okay, that is against you too. And it says that he has a schematic of your life. Now, do you guys know what a schematic is? It's in Ephesians chapter 6. It says he has schemes. He knows he has schemes against you, meaning he knows the schematic. Now, what's a schematic? Has anybody taken an electronics course? Right? Remember electronics? You have to put down this little map. And on the map, there's like where the resistors go. Remember that? And you guys didn't do that? And you had to weld it all together and make an AM radio. It was awesome. I did. And you turn it on and it's like all... And you're like, I got some sound out of this bad boy. And you're like, oh, that's pretty good. I mean, it's not bad. I mean, it wasn't like nothing came out of it, but the static. But that was pretty cool. you know, and you had a little speaker and everything. But the map that told you where to place everything is a schematic. And it says Satan has a schematic of all of us, you know. So he knows exactly where my flesh weak parts are, you know what I mean? And man, his goal is to keep us locked into this fleshly way of life and to make, he wants to rule this world in a way so that it influences my brain to go, oh, that's fine, that's good, oh, that's great, and I just get force-fed just lard all day long, just a bunch of fat, and I'm just eating it, and it's coming out of my mouth. And he's just like, yeah, eat it, Bo, eat it. And I'm just like, yeah, that's good. I love that stuff. It's so tasty. It's like, have you ever been to a donut store? And I used to dig donuts out of a trash can at one time in my life, I hate to say. But yeah, because, you know, donut stores always, if you ever get poor, they always throw their donuts out. You know, at night, they throw the old donuts out. So there's usually a lot in the dumpster.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool to know, huh? Not too many pastors could tell you about dumpster diving. Right? But if you ate donuts, and I like the small donuts that are the ones with the like cake donuts with the frosting and like a coconut on there. I like coconut a lot.
Is that mint?
No. But don't get me any. But if I eat them, like I can eat probably six maybe at a time. But thing is I get sick. You know what I mean? It's like, but I don't recognize it till like an hour after, and I just feel horrible. You know, I don't feel good. But can you imagine just keep eating donuts, man? Could you imagine every day going to Donut Queen or Dunkin' Donuts, and you go, every meal, I'm going to chow donuts. That's what I'm going to do. Dude, what would it be like on day six? Dude, you'd be like, you'd be pushing it in there, right? It would just, you'd be puking it as you push it in there. It'd be nasty. You know what I mean? That's Satan, dude. Satan's just like, just push the donut in, man. It tastes good, doesn't it? Isn't it sweet? Isn't it sweet to the taste buds? And you're like, uh-huh. You know, but it hits the stomach, and all of a sudden the stomach just goes, dude, no more. No more sugar, bro. The pancreas can't create the amount of insulin that your body's trying to produce. So we're going to do diabetes now. Have fun. You know what I mean? So now you're diabetic. Enjoy your life. You know what I mean? But you keep eating the donuts because Satan keeps telling you to do it. Even though the doctor, Jesus, says, dude, you're diabetic now. Stop. Stop right now, right? Dr. Jesus says that. You go, no. Because Satan keeps telling you to do it. Now, that's a pretty elementary analogy, but is it good or what? It's awesome, huh? Totally. So anyway, Satan's another one, okay, that can do that, right? He makes everything look great. So whatever you think is cool, it's probably from Satan right now. I just want you to know that. Whatever you think tastes good in the world, it's probably from the devil, you know? And that's true. That's so much true. I mean, just watch the shows we watch, right? We watch them and go, how many of us go, man, I love that show. It's awesome. And then go, why do you like it? And then watch it and go, is that really of God? And probably go, no. Okay. It's probably not, right? Okay, so you have the flesh, you have the Satan, and then what do you have? I already mentioned it kind of in the talk of Satan, but what do you have? The world. The world system. Right, the world and the lust in the world, right? That's against you. So when you're young, you have the whole influence of the world that's telling you, you need to do this and you need to do that, and you need to go this way, and this is how you're successful, and this is how this is, blah, 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 blah. And God's word might say something completely opposite from the world's way of doing things. And at some point, you have to make a decision. I'm going to actually fight that world system. And I'm going to go serve Jesus Christ instead. And these are things that happen when you want to serve God. And Nehemiah is a guy who just loves Jesus, man. He wants to serve God. But there's always those hindrances. Now, if you turn with me in your Bibles, I'm going to get a little crazy on you today, Bethany. And I'm going to have you turn to Luke. Chapter 14. Yeah, find out where my whole bench of girls right there went. Are they all in the bathroom together?
No, they're all.
That is crazy. We're going to have a chat. Serious bathroom break. Are they smoking cigarettes in the bathroom?
I hope not.
I saw the most nastiest thing this morning. You want me to tell you?
Yeah.
Okay. I was at Circle K. I went to buy Zach a coffee because I've been buying Zach coffees every Sunday just so that he has a lot of coffee. Okay? Okay? That's enough said. Because if I don't, Zach will go to the coffee thing and he'll drink the whole pot of coffee. You know, so I go, man, you know what? I'm going to hook Zach up before. We're going to work on this. You know what I mean? So I'm at Circle K and there's a lady in front of me. Okay? And she's like, can I have, you know, you're kind of used to like them going, hey, can I have a pack of cigs and, you know, maybe, scratch and sniff or whatever those things are. One of those lottery things. I never did them before. Is it scratch and sniff or scratch and rub? Or I don't know. Whatever. Oh, man. So anyway, you know what she buys? Skull. Dude, that's gnarly. I was like, whoa, bro. She's buying dip. Dip. Boosh. Ping. I was like, oh, dude, that's awesome. Dude, a chick with dip. You don't mess with chicks that do dip. I just want to tell you right now. No way. Okay, Luke 14. What? I don't know, man. She didn't have cowboy boots. She looked, what was threw me off is she looked like she was getting ready for church. She was all nicely dressed. And I was kind of like, and she's like, can I have two things of skull? And I was just like, whoa, okay. And it was a deal. It was 2 for 1. Anyway, Luke 14. I know, it was crazy. Look at ministering. Ministering and what Jesus says about it. Okay, verse 26. If anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife, children, brother and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down and first count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Okay, so his example is if you're going to buy some, if you're going to build something, you got to make sure you have enough money to build it, right? Right. Lest after he lay the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him. So when you're, he says, when you're going to serve me, you don't do it halfway, right? You count the cost. It's going to cost you something to serve Jesus, man. For Nehemiah, it's going to cost him something. You know, when you make a decision, you know, he was probably pretty happy being the cupbearer. Pretty good job. Pretty cake. But God was telling him, you know what? It's time to go back to Jerusalem and go serve my people. And so he left the confines of the citadel, beautiful palace, all the riches there, man. Think of how cool that was. And he goes back and he serves. And when he goes back to serve God, you think it's going to be great because God's on his side, right? Wrong. People are there to mock him and to get mad at him and to prevent him from doing the work that he's called to do. There's things that God has put on your guys' heart to do for him, to serve him. And there's things that are against you guys, that come against you, your flesh, Satan, and the world. And at some point, you have to count the cost of what it's going to cost you to serve Jesus if he is really Lord of your life, if he is really your master and your savior. It's going to cost you something. And Jesus goes on and he gives another example. He says, or what king in verse 31 going to make war against another king does not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? Or else while the other is still a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks conditions of peace. So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has, he cannot be my disciple. That's pretty radical. Right? So he basically, Jesus lays down a pretty heavy gauntlet on serving him. And that is, when you're in the flesh, You can't serve God. You have to live in the Spirit. You have to walk according to God's word. You have to pray, be seeking the Lord, you know, studying, being around his brothers and sisters, other people, things like that. Because the world's going to come against you. Everything's going to come against you. And you have to count that cost. Some people won't like you. Some people will mock you, you know. It's amazing when you stand up for God and you make stands for the Lord, how there is difficulty that will come your way. Now, how many of you guys have faced that kind of difficulty in high school? How many of you guys have really faced that kind of adversity? You know, where you've made a stand and you felt, what does it feel like when you have people coming against you? It feels kind of scary, don't it? Doesn't it feel a little overwhelming? You know, I tell you, I think it does. You know, I think it does. Sometimes, like, I'll watch TV and I'll think, like, in my brain, I'll be flipping through the stations and I'll see something, like, on entertainment. And I'll think, man, like, what is it like to stand up in that environment, in an entertainment, in a Hollywood environment, and really take a stand for Jesus in that environment? It must be kind of scary if you were an actor or an actress. Like, I think it would be crazy if Katy Perry, man, one day just took a stand for Jesus. I think it would be radical. With her Christian background, growing up in Santa Barbara, you know, all of her songs tend to have a weird biblical content to them. It's like she can't get away from it, though she desperately tries, right? She's getting millions of dollars based off of because of her songs, which have this weird thread of Bible through all of it, right? Which in a world that totally hates God, but yet they love her music, right? And her influence is all Christian. Yet she strongly wants to break out of it, right? But what if she just went, you know what? I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to embrace my Christianity. Just think of the resistance that could happen to her, you know, and how scary that would be to have all your peers look at you and just go, man, dude, you know, it's difficult. For me, it started with my father. You know, when I made a stand for Jesus and my dad was anti-Christ, you know, my dad was the first one who mocked me. Why are you reading that Bible? Why do you read the Bible? He thought it was lame. And I remember thinking, like, man, that sucks. Like, my dad's not into this. You know, like, he's not encouraging me. But it was my first lesson, and that's the cost that's going to... I'm going to have to count the cost. And then it was other people. It was friends. I found out that certain friends didn't like it when I read the Bible, and certain friends, hey, guys. And certain friends didn't like it when I, you know... wanted to continue. How was the game?
We lost.
What was the score?
2-1. 2-1.
We're
the only team that scored on them.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I played for like 5 minutes.
Really? How did it feel?
Hurt.
Oh, okay. She got a bad ankle. So, you know, Jesus is just telling us, hey, count the cost. Does that make some sense? So Nehemiah is counting the cost. People are coming against him. I can't wait to drink that water. And, I know, dude. It's like, I'm like, I'll drink it. I want some. So let's go back to Nehemiah. We'll finish it up. And then we're going to have a time of holding hands and singing Kumbaya. I don't even know. Let's see. It's kind of cool. In verse 15 of chapter 4, it says, and it happened when our enemies heard. So Nehemiah is trying to do this building of the wall again. When our enemies heard that it was known to us that God had brought their plot to nothing. Notice God comes to their rescue and brings the plots of the enemies to of nothing. So when you go to serve God and you're committed to the Lord and you count the cost, God's going to see you through. And I love that. You know, God's going to help you get through the times, you know, that you've dedicated to God and things like that. It's beautiful. There's not going to be any resistance. There will be some trials, but God will get you through that. And it says in verse 16, so it was from that time on that half of my servants worked at construction while the other half held the spears, the shields, the bows, the armor. The leaders were behind all the house of Judah. And basically at this point, because there was so many enemies against Israel, that they had guys that were working on the project, and then they had an army basically around them. And in verse 20, it says, so we labored in the work, and half of the men held the spears from the daybreak until the stars appeared. So all day, all night. And at the same time, I also said to the people, let each man and his servants stay at night in Jerusalem, that they may be on our guard by night and working by day. So this is a beautiful time for the people of Israel, because now they are starting to build Jerusalem. And they're starting to build the walls again. So it's going to be cool. The next service, Peter's going to go through chapter 6. We'll have him go through chapter 6 and the rest of the book. It basically continues with the wall being built and people trying to conspire against them to build the wall. And then it gets into something really cool, and that is it goes through this time of like they go through some hardcore prayer and hardcore Bible reading, and really seeking the Lord, and they enter into this festival and blah, blah, blah. It's really cool. But it's just a time of, you know, seeing Nehemiah's heart for his people. So it's really cool. Anyway.